Today, the new workplace vaccine rule. I'm David Brancaccio. January 4th, that is now the deadline for companies to ensure that all their workers are either vaccinated against COVID or get tested once a week. This from the Biden administration today, covering private sector firms with 100 employees or more. Many places have been doing this already. Others were waiting for the Fed's requirement. Also, workers at any health facility that gets Medicare or Medicaid funding also will have that January 4th deadline. All of this is not exactly a vaccination mandate, as weekly testing is an alternative. Tomorrow is the official count of people on payrolls during October. Thursdays, we consult this noted economist named Diane Swank. Hello there.
Good morning.
All right. So the big jobs report, the one the government issues for the month, comes out tomorrow morning. You think it's going to trend strong?
Yeah, I think it's going to come in hotter than most people expect, close to 650,000, maybe even a little north of that. What we're going to see is, I think, some catch up in hiring in the public sector and education that we lost in September as school districts had a hard time ramping up. But we're also seeing a comeback in large employers hiring back. We saw many people who couldn't take jobs in the month of September because they were either out taking care of people who were sick due to the Delta wave or sick themselves.
It's an important reminder that you're giving us, Diane, this notion that this is not all discretionary, whether or not people are participating in the labor force or not. Sometimes they're sick. Sometimes they're sick with COVID still.
Exactly. And in fact, the number of people who couldn't work at all during the survey weeks from July, August, September moved up by over 500,000 to 1.5 million during the peak of the Delta wave. It really is indicative of how much illness itself, the pandemic itself, affects people's ability to look for work and show up at work.
All right, Diane Swank, she's the chief economist at Grant Thornton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, Airbnb publishes quarterly results later today. It's also now extending its ban on renting properties to partiers. Renters without top reviews cannot book one night only. This is about COVID, the neighbors, and local regulators. Marketplace's Matt Levin reports.
Keggers next door weren't the big issue in Truckee, a small mountain town on the California side of Lake Tahoe.
Things like weddings or receptions.
David Polavy is a Truckee City Council member. He says the pandemic and all the Airbnb tourists it produced helped speed new regulations on noise and trash.
The extreme tourism pressures that cities like us really saw did provide us political cover to sort of do what we wanted to do anyway.
And while in the past Airbnb might have fought those regulations in court, it's taken a gentler approach in recent years. Karen Shea researches short-term rentals at the University of Denver.
Their sentiments towards government has changed from confronting to collaboration.
One example, Airbnb has been sharing more of its data with cities that may be looking to boost the local tourism industry. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
I'm David Brancaccio. The Federal Reserve yesterday was clearer than it's ever been. It is going to gently, slowly, deliberately ramp down its buying of bonds, a pandemic maneuver to keep the financial system flush during an emergency. Now, this is a subtle thing, not the equivalent to the host of the party locking away the spiked punch. Karen Petru, co-founder and managing partner of Federal Financial Analytics in Washington, joins us. Hi.
Good morning, David.
I could get all breathless. Oh, my goodness, they're going to ratchet back stimulus. That's a little bit overstating it, though, right?
Kind of a lot overstating it, actually. What the Fed decided to do yesterday was taper, which is kind of like you have a jacket that's really, really big and you taper it a little at the waist, but it really doesn't show. It's tiptoeing here.
But isn't there an assumption here that the Fed is kind of leaning on the theory that inflation is not endemic?
The Fed yesterday, again, hedged its bets. Transitory, it now tells us, doesn't mean short term. It means it just isn't kind of the ice age. It's not forever. I think for any family, this transitory, and is it short-term, is it long-term, is really missing a critical equality point, because gas, food, housing, medical care, the prices of key goods, child care are going up, up, up. You're not going to see food prices all of a sudden go down 10%. This quote-unquote transitory inflation, in my opinion, is very, very corrosive. And we saw that Tuesday at the ballot boxes in Virginia, New Jersey, and lots of other places. People are angry, and they have a right to be. This isn't transitory when they can't buy diapers.
Karen Petru, co-founder and managing partner, Federal Financial Analytics. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, David.
One strategy at the big UN climate conference in Scotland now, getting countries to promise to get off coal power, which produces large amounts of CO2. Chile, Vietnam, and Poland now bring to more than 40 the countries pledging off of coal. No single strategy covers a challenge this big. Another is promoting carbon markets, sometimes through cap and trade, allowing firms that curtail carbon to earn money for their efforts by selling some of what they save to other companies who won't or can't cut back as much. At least that's what they advertise. Marketplace's Andy Euler has this refresher.
Cap and trade starts with the cap part.
So a cap and trade program says this is the amount of emissions we're going to tolerate.
Xiling Su is an environmental economist at Florida State University. He says then the government issues permits for that amount of emissions.
There are going to be buyers and sellers for those permits, but that price is going to fluctuate.
In other words, the government cedes control and says,
you in the market decide what that trading price is going to be.
Now, Sue admits that that's a little more complicated than, say, a carbon tax, which sets a fixed price on all pollution.
You know, the biggest concern I have with cap and trade is it requires permits and monitoring and administrative agencies doing things. That sounds a lot harder to do.
But despite those concerns, there are now more than 50 cap-and-trade programs around the world. The European Union adopted its carbon market back in 2005, China in 2017. Here in the United States, California set up its own cap-and-trade system. Marlo Lewis is a senior fellow in energy and environmental policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. That's a think tank that argues climate change isn't that big of a deal. He says California's program just isn't a great idea.
Its purpose really is to drive investment into renewables, not by lowering the cost of renewables or improving their performance, but just by handicapping the competitors.
But California's system has reduced carbon emissions, and cap and trade remains an attractive option for lawmakers trying to do exactly that. Larry Goulder, professor of environmental economics at Stanford, thinks cap and trade would be more likely to get through Washington than a carbon tax.
First of all, it doesn't involve the T word, a tax. And also, there's less uncertainty about the amount of emissions.
He says environmentalists are going to like that, as long as they think the cap that's set on emissions is low enough to make a difference. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
And I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.